Today we're talking with Barbara Poley on the third Mesa Hopi about the Hopi Leadership Program. Where did the idea come from, or the inspiration? What made you think about, you know, when did you first think, I'm going to develop a Hopi Leadership Program?
I thought about that and brought forth that I believe I began thinking about it when I was working for the Hopi tribal government system, because that's where I observed a lot of employees under our tribal government that could really use some of the skills that I thought were definitely needed by them. And then they could move into higher positions within the tribal government, but they needed to learn how to lead. And a lot of our people don't understand that. It's not a big thing to learn how to lead. If you take steps and understand the people that you begin working with. So that was where it first came about. And then when I finished with tribal government, I went to work for the Hopi Foundation. And we were pretty much free to bring in programs that were needed under the organization that the people might need in our communities. But I started thinking of myself in that leadership position. How was I going to make sure this organization was going to be maintained for years after my time here? I guess I had always thought, we get older and we have to think about retirement. Although retirement was a long ways off for me, I still thought about, how do I train people to take over programs that I might create or that needed leadership for the programs we already had? So that's where it came about. And probably that was around 2005 when I really seriously thought about it. I did talk to my associate, which was Loris Taylor. We both came on board at the Hopi Foundation at the same time. We both worked for the former chairman before that. So we took on the position part-time, each of us part-time, thinking running a nonprofit organization was going to be easy. And so I had run one before, but I had a lot of staff at that time. This one was like just from the beginning, and they had a volunteer person from the board that was running that. Then they finally got some funds to pay for people to come on board, but only got enough funds for like one person, they said. And we counter proposed to them, to the board, that since we're just coming out of the chairman's office, that was huge mental work that we had to do there. So we said, we'd like to have you consider us both, and we'll do part-time. Well, lo and behold, part-time was never part-time for either of us.
Yeah, we ended up both working full-time, I imagine.
Right, we did. And we had to find our own funds to keep us going after that. There were no, there was no grant writer, there was no, you know, fund seeker, anything like that. So it was hard, but we managed. We found ways to do it. We found connections to help connect us to others. That's always a big part of being in nonprofit work. You have to make those connections and you have to follow up on connections. But anyway, that was the second part of thinking of the leadership program. And thinking about it, I ran it by my associate, Loris Taylor. But she said, it's a great idea. And, you know, you should continue thinking about it. But I understood where she was coming from, because she's a policy making type of person. And this didn't attract her too much. It wasn't as attractive to her to help me work it out. She just said, okay, I'll support you. And so I was able to find another person that we had become associated with. He's a non-Indian, but he was working for the community. His wife was out here. She's a doctor. And he was not working. He left a big six-figure job to move out here with his doctor wife. And so he was looking for things to do. And people sent him to me for other things that he was talking to them about, because they needed a fiscal agent for something they wanted to do. We weren't really into that at that time. But as we talked more and more, I learned about the skills he had. He had great writing skills. And I talked to him about this program, the leadership program, the idea I had. And he got so excited about it. He said, let me help you, you know, let me help you with, if you need the framework and things like that, I'll be happy to be there for you. And that's how we got started. Just the you know, small number talking about it. And then pretty soon it got to the point where I think that was Kellogg Foundation at that time. And we were doing some small work under the Kellogg Foundation. I told him that might be an area where I might be able to get the first dollars for the program. So he helped me draft up a proposal on that. And it had huge, huge ideas in the beginning. It was like the world, you know, and a lot of it came to me based on some of the trainings I had received out of the Hopi Foundation as I was working there in what could happen to a person if you got them trained and skilled in certain areas. What could happen to our community if we brought them home with these kinds of skills? I wasn't totally thinking about the cultural aspect at first. It was more, I need these people trained so they can take over program management positions. So in the future, they can take over my position. That was how small I was thinking, just take over my position when I leave.
Because you were thinking about building capacity in your own community, which, right. You know, what you're saying, it wasn't big, but it is. So I think you started big, but then you got bigger and grander. And so you had this dream, and your original colleague, you know, she didn't share that. You said she was more of a policy person, but then you found someone who really recognized it.
Well, the other thing, having somebody like him was, you know, because he was here without a job, he was seeking something to do. And he knew he could write well. He knew he could help me bring in some dollars and rephrase some of the ways I was talking about the program. You know, he said, let's try this. And he, again, someone from the outside knows how the outside thinks when you're going after those kind of fundings. So that was a good thing for me. But he was certainly very well recognized in the community, in the area where they live, which was First Mesa. That's where our healthcare center is. And because of, you know, his love for the land and learning about farming, those kinds of things, he became very attractive to have the farmers listen to him. And he was so good. He was a good listener, but he was also one of those analytical type of persons that could, you know, take something and say, well, why don't we do this? I mean, he didn't take it like he knew everything, but he could come out with, this is what might be possible. What about, you know, what do you think? We had good discussions around that. And he already recognized that I was the leader of the organization. So he was not going to try to override things that I'd say, which I felt later on he should have. There are times that people have to bring in what it is, what their thoughts are, with not being fearful of somebody in those higher level positions. Mm-hmm. When I learned that, it also helped me think about the titles that people have. out on the reservation, you have people with the government titles of being the chairman, the vice chairman, of being council people. You know, those are looked to as the higher level positions. And I began to think on the outside, is that you have PhDs, you have people talking about their lawyer title and things like that. And I thought, you know, if I want to get to know people, if I want to build relationships, I don't want to use titles. I don't want to know what their titles are. And so when I started going to events outside of here, I never look for titles. We all wear those name tags, and there people put their, you know, titles on there. Well, I would only see the name, and that was it. And I could then just talk real easily, ask questions, because that person didn't know me, I didn't know them. It was easier for me. And that's how I've lived my leadership way throughout the organization. And that to me is how I was able to bring consistent cooperation from the grant locations that we had to go through. And I didn't feel like I was less than anyone. I felt I knew something that they didn't know.
I was interested, you said when you first started that, you know, thinking about this program, you were looking at building capacity in your tribe, in your community, for people to take over positions and to take over programs and some things that you had started. And you said at the beginning, you didn't think about the cultural part. What caused that? What brought that about, Barbara?
I think it was because I spent my early years off the reservation, and I wasn't in the everyday life of how you live on Hopi. What was the more important things? What was the cycle that you had to do? Although my husband would do those type of things, because he would come out to Hopi when we lived off the reservation. He'd come out to Hopi, take care of the planting, and come out for ceremonial things. But I was so busy in my work off the reservation that I had my thinking going too much non-native, I guess, way. But the people I met in the first organization that I was working for was a Native organization, NACA, Native Americans for Community Action. By the way, they're celebrating their 50th year this year. I had so many Native people in there, both Hopi, Navajo, people from Havasupai, those people in the northern part of our state. They would come into the center. And I began to, in my talkings with them, recognize that there were some differences that come from these different tribes, just those three major tribes that I was working with. And I thought, you know, I had to learn how to talk to them appropriate. I had to learn a little bit more about their culture. So I was asking more questions. And that way I was able to help them understand me and how I wanted to assist if they needed some help. Those got me to at least the early beginnings of, you know, culture is important. I didn't realize I was going to be coming to Hopi to work. I thought I was going to be living off the reservation for forever, I guess. But we did have the opportunity to come home to live, to help take care of parents, Oren's parents, and my mother, which is a value that we have. And I'd been learning values from my parents, from my grandparents. I didn't know those were values. I just thought, this is the way you live. You know, this is what they tell you you need to do, and this is how you do it. So I didn't understand, I guess, what people were talking about when they talked about values. So it's, but when I came here and started working just primarily with Hopi, I did start to learn a little bit more about ceremonies and learn more about the cycles that happen and watch and observe our own people as they participated in things to be able to understand what's the strength that they gain from doing all these things. What is important that makes them say it needs to be this way? What keeps them going in a community, a small community, if they act in this manner? Mm-hmm. And so some of those early learnings I had began to help me think about self-identity. And it's like I was beginning to do that. What is my identity? How do I practice? How do I not practice? Where do I learn how to practice? And some of my early years was just learning for myself, mm-hmm. trying to teach myself, trying to act appropriately with my in-laws, trying to do some of the things that I was supposed to do as an in-law. Those were teachings that helped me take a look at what was necessary to be included in the program later on. Mm-hmm. But as I said, most of the time I talked about this program with the lens of living off reservation most of my years. But as I came home to work with our people and realized that this is where I was going to be living forever, then that was like, this is my home. How do I want to make sure that we can maintain who we are, what we have to do, what our responsibilities are, especially around family? And so I started talking to more of the people who had the cultural backgrounds. And we have three mesas, and they are a little bit different in some of the things they do. So learning out here, if you're trying to do an overall something for an overall program for across our reservation, you have to know some of the differences from our three mesas. So it was in the beginning of the program when we started it, it was, I needed a framework. And mm-hmm. the people I had met off the reservation were primarily non-Native, but I had associated with other Natives outside of here. But I needed skills, and that's what I was looking for. I'm always looking for these kinds of things in people. Who has the skill to do what that will help me get it done? And there was a executive director in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We became very good friends because I would call on her. I was a new executive director for our organization. I would call on her and ask her, how do I do this? This is what I'm up against. What's the best way to take care of this? Most of them were in the program development and financial areas, boardmanship, things like that. So by doing that, we became very good friends. And she had a partner who had worked for Google. And she was training people at Google. So when I had talked to her about my idea, she loved it. And she said, oh, we can bring Karen in. She's a good trainer. She can give us some, you know, ways to do the planning. I said, well, it needs to be not just the framework, but I said, I need to have the cultural aspect along with it. I will be looking for people. So that's how I started working on team to create the plan for this. The front page of our curriculum, it has two sides to it. One, it's developed by Micah. He worked for the tribal government. That's the one. And he worked for the tribal government in the cultural preservation office when he came home from his higher education. He is Hopi. Mm-hmm. His parents are Hopi. They were teachers. But he also got his degree in archaeology. And so he was already doing work on looking at the research that was done around Hopi, trying to see if they were right. And so living out here, that he had a good chance to do that working in the department he did. But one of the things for him was, we had a sit down because he was said he was getting ready to leave this area. And I asked him to come over, and we sat down and I said, why are you thinking of leaving? You're very skilled for our Hopi people. And he said, well, I try to recommend things to people, his supervisors. He said, they don't want to take it. They said, I don't know enough, I'm too young. And I felt really bad, because that is how our people sometimes, you know, we tell them to go off, get educated, and come back home and work. But we don't teach ourselves how to accept what they have learned or listen well enough to what they have to say, and how maybe they could relate it to the land that we're living in, to the language that we have. So he was quite disappointed. And I said, how long will you be here? He said, well, maybe another 6 months to finish out my contract. So I said, why don't you sit down with me and listen to my idea for a new program here, and help me at least get it designed with the talent you have in the cultural part of it. He said, that sounds like fun. So I was able to bring it. You know, you have to tap into what they know to bring back their energy towards something that might need to be done. And so he was really happy to do that. And that design work, the resources that he could pull out for the portion talking about Hopi, he just went to town on that. And that's how we got a part of the big cultural aspect to it. And he also knew some of the village leaders that he had been working with, and recommending, well, maybe they can be the ones who can be the presenters of some of this information. And for them to condense what they had been giving was very difficult. And for a person like me to be able to sit down, or even Micah to sit down with them and say, we need to have it to this portion. Can I help reduce some of the areas? You know, I found that when you're working with people, you have to learn how to understand who they are, what's important to them, and how you speak to them about doing something like that, condensing, because it's theirs. It really is theirs. And you don't want to step on that. But you also have to be the one who reads that information and tries to say, these are the important aspects of it. Can you just stay on this or this topic, couple of topics? And that's how we got some of them trained to do better. But we, with our local cultural part of it, we also learned to find people who knew about the plants out here, where they grow, and where there was some great places to see in our backyard. One of the photos of the people I have is those big rocks. Mm-hmm. And that's just about 10 miles from here. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful area that we, this person knew about. He said we could take a trip out there. So each time we had short trips, and then they got longer because people wanted to learn more. A lot of our own people have not been to those great sites around us and don't know about them. So it became important that if we were going to try to understand who we are, what is our responsibility for maintaining ourselves in our community, what is our responsibility to teach our children how to feel like they have a place that's important to live and to take care of. Those thoughts are like, I haven't written them down. I know I have. I need to write them down as to how all these changes took place. Because the first year's group, we gave them a whole lot of information. We developed the program so it would be twice a month for 9 months. Twice a month for 9 months. And within that, they would need to, if they were working, talk with their supervisors and be able to take off that time.
Barbara, that is a lot of learning from doing this program. I'm just kind of gleaning some of the really important things, because you're talking about maintaining who we are and our responsibility to keep our community going. And so you had part of it, you know, the structure for working and taking over programs and things like that. But then you started building in the culture, the cultural component, looking at identity, and then identifying people in the community to do that for you. And I really like how you said understanding who people are and what is important to them. I just wanted to stress how insightful I think that is. And I don't know that people necessarily do that all the time.
I can say that it took longer to develop the program just because I spent time interviewing or asking the person who I was going to send to meet with them. This is how I'd like to have you see, talk with them. And out here in the earlier years, the male has been dominant. And so that's what Loris and I learned in the early years of running the organization, is that our Hopi men feel have gone in the direction of Anglo thinking of the male being the more dominant person. Whereas later we found some men talking about, well, really, that's not the way. The women have been very, very instrumental. It's just that some of us have forgotten this. And as we learned that, though, we, in trying to get some of the project work done, other project work, we trained a young man to be able to speak to those leaders in their language as well. And we were lucky he was able to speak Hopi. So we would go with him. He was a young man at that time, maybe in his mid-20s. And we just trained him what to say in case certain questions were asked about the project we were wanting to work with them on. And we'd go with them to the meetings, and he'd get up there and he'd talk to them. And because he was a male, they just responded quickly. And he was young, so he gave the respect that he knew he needed to do. And us as females, we sat there and listened and learned. And then he'd come back with us and tell us, so this is what I was feeling, and how do I take care of that next time? So that was on-site training that we gave to this young man. And that was only because we knew the culture of where we live. But we slowly changed some of that as people recognize us as female leaders for this organization.
That's a very powerful outcome, Barbara.
Well, I see, and I used to observe when I go elsewhere to, especially the northern tribes, when I have to go someplace and a lot were there, I would observe how strong the female were. And I thought, well, this is fantastic. They know, who they are. But I also observed when we had a marriage from the Southwest female with maybe a northern male, that marriage never lasted either. It just was for a while, in the strength of, I don't know if the male at that time, because he would be with a Southwest person, felt he could be the strong arm in the marriage. But I never saw those marriages last very long. But I've always, that's why I've wondered, and I've tried to learn about our different tribes when we go places. It's like, the most important thing to me is understanding how people react to one another and why is that happening? That's just been something that's been a part of what I want to learn all the time. And that's why I listen well, because if you don't listen, you can't learn. And that was one of my largest or biggest requests when we were doing the leadership program, is that they need to learn to listen.
Barbara, this has been really interesting to hear about your idea, I guess a dream, from a need that you saw in the community, and then how you identified people to work with you and support you and help you, and how you utilized young people in different roles to culturally negotiate in the community. And in the process, they got a lot of leadership experience hands-on. So Laurel, would you want to talk about a few of the people that have gone through the program and what they're doing today?
Yeah, with all the programs, before I left the Hopi Foundation, I was able to ask Laurel to come up with a few of them. And we had 58 people go through the 5. Have five sessions that we had. She was one of the first ones. Her background was working for a profit organization here on the tribe with the housing department. And she would have to, you know, take in money and be business oriented by running people down, seeking the money, those type of things. So she was profit business oriented. And she actually had to be nudged, really nudged hard by a person who knew her, who was one of the renters in that area. And that was Andy. That was the first one that talked with me and helped me frame it. But he encouraged her to apply, because that first year was the most difficult to get applicants. And I was hitting all the people I knew. Can you talk to somebody? You know, this is what we're trying to do. And towards the deadline when we were going to talk about, we need to figure out who's going to be here, how many is going to be here. It was like, I was down to the last straw, and I was just worried. How are we going to do this? I don't want to do this just with 5 people, 6 people. This was developed not for me, but for them. But how do I help them understand that? Previous to that, we did host some focus group sessions with some of the Hopis across the reservation. And I had another person who helped me. She was from Maine. That was her skill as well, creating how to create questions and how many they should be. So she came to Hopi, and we worked with a number of focus groups out here to gain from them what they thought this program could lend to our communities, and to also see if they would support it. Through them, most of them were older people, because we were trying to say, it's needed for the young ones. And they were very supportive. But they, when we went back and asked, can you help us find someone, they were afraid to ask. They were like, well, I don't know how to tell them, you know, what it's about. So I was getting hesitancy from people. And but we finally came up with, I felt almost the last day, and Laurel was one of those second to the last day before she finally said, okay, I'll apply, but I don't know. I know it's nonprofit, and I have not worked with nonprofits. So I don't know enough about them. But she cared about the person who was encouraging her. And luckily she came on board, and we were able to get 13. And a lot of people said, but you have 13, you know, the thinking outside of the area. It's unlucky to have 13. more things are going to go wrong. And I said, no, the number 13 is lucky to me. My daughter was born on the 13th. It's never been a bad time for me. So we went with it, and she was very, very quiet, as most of them were quiet during the sessions. But I think she's a real good thought person as well. And she excelled towards the end. But what she did while she was going through the classes, she would go home and talk to her husband. He's a radiologist at Hopi Healthcare, also an artist. He's the one that did our logos. She would take what she learned, take some of her lesson plans, and would talk to him about it. And she got him so excited about going through the training that he applied the next year.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's how we looked at her, is that she really enjoyed the program at the end, and wanted to see how she could continue helping even in a volunteer stages. Well, at that time we were thinking maybe it's time for us to get a coordinator, because it was taking my time and I had all these other things to be responsible for. Monica also had time that she had to take care of the programs as well. So we're saying we need a person to just be designated to manage the program. And we put out a hiring request, and she did apply, and we thought she was the right person, especially since she went through the program, she heard the people, you know, within the program, and we felt she had the skills to coordinate this well. And she has. So she's been the first coordinator after the first program year for all these other programs as we went through it. And the first graduation that we had of her class, we did at a school, one of the elementary schools out here. And the relative to one of the applicants of the 13 was there. And his words are the only thing that I keep in mind when I think back about this program and was it a success. He's an old Hopi man, and he came up to me and he said, "You need to keep this going. Don't stop doing it." He said, "This is good for our people."